Welcome to the Entrepreneurs MBA, bringing you lessons from real-life entrepreneurs they don't teach in business school. Here's your host, business coach and marketing strategist, Adam Kipnis.
So it's great to talk with Jeffrey Hazlett. He's the founder of the C-Suite Network, among many other things. I want to jump right into the conversation. Jeff, you've done a lot of really cool stuff in your career, and we'll get to some of that. But before you were the chief marketing officer at Kodak, before all of that, where did you get your start, and was entrepreneurship on your mental plan all the way along the process?
You know, that's a good question. I got my start in politics primarily. I was very active in politics and, you know, in college and before college and high school even. I ran for lieutenant governor of the state of South Dakota when I was in between my junior and senior year in high school. But so, yeah, I was very active in politics. That kind of led me just to know that side of the business and got me into the marketing side of things, you know, running campaigns, running ballot issues, running, organizations. You know, I started association management, a whole bunch of groups. So yeah, I did a lot of that kind of activity. And then, you know, I started buying companies. You know, I would be, you know, I had an association management company. I was managing all these associations and doing the lobbying and everything else. So I needed printing. And so pretty soon I went and bought a printing company. Then I bought this company and bought that company. And then, you know, it just kind of led me on that journey. Like, hey, I like making money, you know, so it was good. So, I could very well just be back, you know, running campaigns and doing a lot. I was a very good lobbyist. I was, you know, I'm good at most things I do. Nonetheless, I'll say that, you know what I mean? Could I put my heart into it. I put my everything, you know, I love work. I do love working. I love in doing what I do. But you know, it makes it easy. So that's how I got started.
All right, fair enough. And along those lines, so I met you through my podcast and putting it on your network on C-Suite Radio.
Yep.
And since that time, which was, I don't know, 18 months ago, now you've got C-Suite, like seven different things.
Yeah, we got C-Suite. We're about to announce C-Suite Legal. We've got C-Suite SEO coming. We got C-Suite Connect coming. We've got C-Suite Supplies. Yeah, we're branding that. It's a very good brand. You know, that we've got C-Suite TV, C-Suite Radio, the network itself, C-Suite Network, C-Suite Network Advisors. We've got all these different aspects of it. It's been pretty good. So it's a good environment.
It's a great opportunity, and you're very visible now in today's virtual world. Obviously, if we listen to this 2 years in the future, it's still going to be very raw in our minds, and we're going to remember how we got here. But thinking back, again, pre-Kodak, you were running campaigns, you were buying and selling companies. Why stop doing that, essentially, and go and run $17 billion budget, thousands of employees for a big corporate name that was having some challenges at the time in a challenging economic environment? I mean, you took on a big load, very different from some of the stuff you were doing prior where you had...
Same stuff, just different zeros, you know, just different intensities, you know. Yeah, my job is to solve problems, you know. At one time I'm on a publicly traded board that we took on the chairman, and he did some things that we thought were very inappropriate, and we went after the chairman, and we resigned. And, you know, now the SEC got involved as front page of the Wall Street Journal because three of the five board members did something right. We said, no, you can't do this. And I remember my wife saying to me, why are you messing with this? Why are you still involved with this? And I said, it's what good people do, you know? And so the same thing holds true. I mean, Kodak was an iconic brand. I'm going to go work for a Fortune 100 company. I mean, quite frankly, that's only 500 people in the world that get that opportunity. Only 5,000 get the opportunity to work as an executive at a Fortune 1000. Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's the elite of the elite of the elite. I mean, to be in a Fortune 100 company is, you know, it's one of the biggest jobs in the world. That's the NFL Pro League. That's the Pro Bowl right there. And so, yeah, I jumped at the chance to go do that anywhere, anytime, any place. I think I'd even do it again. I said before, I'm not going to go back and do that. If somebody did offer me at that level again, I probably would think, but you know, they're not going to come looking because now I'm running a small startup and I'm trying to build this and do that. I don't think that chance is going to come again, but if it did, I probably would. I would be very intrigued if it depended, it had to be the right thing. Cause you know, some of those jobs like that, even at that level, they're intense, they're big, they're, but there's a lot of bull that goes with it too. You a lot of crap you have to put up with, and you know, you're getting sued all the time. You got people, you got all these captains of no that surround you, you know, champions of no that want to stop everything. Can't, you know, it's not in the budget. Can't do this, can't do that. That's the side of it I didn't like. I called it Running the Gauntlet. That was my second book, was talking about the extent that you have to do in corporations and companies. You have to run the gauntlet day in and day out. And, you know, it's like two people lining up on both sides of the hallway and they all got knives and sticks and they beat the living crap out of you as you run through the hall. I mean, that's what it's like to be in those big companies.
I bet. And one of the things with the network you've built and the community that you've created through C-Suite that I'm a part of, you always tell us that you're building this plane while it's in the air. Right? Yeah. It's continuously changing. We're thinking about it differently. When you were at Kodak and running marketing, marketing changes on a daily basis. Maybe some of the operations don't, but on marketing, you have to think different. You have to act differently. That was one of the things that led you to the Celebrity Apprentice and getting that exposure. How do you compare building what you're building today with building marketing for a Fortune 100 company? Same skills, different skills.
No, it's the same skills, just different intensity. You have the ability at a smaller company to be able to do it faster and quicker than a big company. You know, you got to imagine back then we were going through massive downturn, massive, you know, digitalization. But, you know, right now with the COVID thing, all of us are doing, it's the same thing, same exact thing. I mean, how do you do it with the distributed workforce? How do you do it when people aren't, you know, face to face? How do you incorporate technology? You know, how do you teach somebody how to go off mute all the time on Zoom? You know, I mean, all those little things like that that you have to do that you learn. How do you pivot to run a, you know, business that we had, quite frankly, a good, we did 150 events last year, 150 in face to face events. Well, we've done 150 in 3 months, all digital. So, okay. So, you know, that's challenging. You know, how do you tell people that, you know, they're going to pay you $10,000, $20,000 a year to be a part of a network and going to be part of, you know, this or that, and we're going to meet physically and now we can't meet physically. So how do you recondition this and reset this, the conditions of satisfaction? You know, that's, so yeah, it's got the same problems, you know. There's no difference between a business on Main Street and one on Wall Street. The only difference is the numbers of zeros. It's the same processes, same things, just scales different. And, you know, and as a small player, if you've got the cash, you can get the scale, meaning you can get the tools, you know, the same tools that I would use at a big company like, I don't know, Salesforce, like DocuSign, I can use in a small company. Right.
Right.
It, exactly. You know, it just means less people are using them or more people are using them. Same things, same exact things. Now they might have some bigger tools, systems in place, but not much. It's a, you know, today as opposed to 20 years ago, it's a different playing field. You know, it's, you know, you could, and as we learned through COVID, Adam, I mean, we've just learned that we can work from home.
Well,
yeah. You know, now, can you get everybody working from home? Can you keep them all engaged? Can you keep them all? And by the way, we also learned that some people shouldn't work from home, you know,
right.
You know, so there's all those pieces too, but it changes the way you think about cost. How do you get the phones to ring on people's cell phones from the office? You know, things like that you didn't have to think about before. So, but a small business or big business got to do the same thing.
And the thinking that goes into it, going back to, it was about March 15th when this really hit home and companies started sending their employees home. You went online almost day one and yep. were online 3, 4, 5 hours a day, day after day with it, whether it was your organization or somebody else's that you were speaking to. How did you prepare yourself to do it so quickly, or did you just do it and see what worked and continue to build?
You said it earlier. I fly the plane and build it as I'm flying it. I just have enough confidence to know I'm not going to crash it. So, and you know, I'm going to change it. I'm going to change the altitude when it gets bumpy. I'm going to accelerate it. I'm going to slow it down. I'm going to toss stuff overboard, you know, to make it so I can fly higher or faster or light, you know, lighter. I go with the gut. I know, you know, maybe I'm a lot like a test pilot, you know, in terms of doing a lot of that stuff. One of my idols is Chuck Yeager from West Virginia, who I'm from West Virginia originally. And I love to read Chuck Yeager, because that son of a gun just flew. That's all he cared about was flying. I like building businesses, same thing. But I knew right on it was the right decision to make. You know, I've said this before public. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a nurse. I can't even sew a mask. But what I can do is be a business first responder. And it made sense. I said, because in crisis, there's opportunities. But even in crisis, you gotta save shit. You gotta save it. So if you're in crisis, it's better to move forward with it than ignore it. So I said, no, we're going into it, and we're going to go into it full facing, you know, as fast as we can and as hard as we can. And everybody's like, no, we should hug everybody first. Hug, heck, we'll hug after it's over with, right?
Right.
And until then, I'm going to run into the burning car and pull them out, and we're going to do that, and we're going to make sure that our car's not on fire. And it was the best decision we could have made, you know. Now, did we do some things right and some things wrong? Yeah. But you know, unlike some people who do get the virus, no one's gonna die, okay, you know, from our actions. So that was the right thing to do. We're gonna go out and we're gonna do what we can do to be the first responder. And of course, you know, for the C-suite network, you know, we're out there helping businesses and executives be themselves. You know, our job isn't to help you be the smartest person in the room. That's up to you. You know, I can't make you be smart, you know, but what I can do is help you be the most strategic person in the room. So I can educate you, I can motivate you, I can inspire you, and maybe even help you with some monetization, you know, if you get engaged. But you got to get engaged, you got to do your part.
That's very true. And one of the things that you've built within the community is that engagement. And you've created leaders within the community that now act as employees, people that had different councils of part of the organization, yeah, because they raised their hand. Tell me a little bit about how that came about and how you've been able to incent people to want to support the community, because I think there's a lot of business owners out there that can do the same thing for their leaders in their communities, whether they know it or not. If you own a business, you're a leader.
Yeah.
And how do you engage people? How have you done it that other people can learn from?
Well, I think it's three things. Three things then with something else. So the three things are we relevant for each other, first of all, as a community? Are we relevant? Is what the audience you're trying to reach and the audience I'm trying to reach, the people you want to talk to, people I want to talk to, people you deal with, people I deal with, and are you one and am I one? Are you this tall to get in? First thing, are we relevant? Once we decide that, that's cool. That means we're related. You know, we're C-suite executives of VP or higher. Boom. Then it's really about reach, Adam. I mean, I help you with reach. You help me with reach. That's what it is. Now, maybe I got a bigger reach than you do. Okay. So what? If we add them all together, we got a bigger reach. Who cares? You know, we don't need to mark territory. We don't need to measure bank accounts. We don't need to do that. We're all in the same boat together. And then third, it becomes then reciprocity. What can I help you with? What can you help me with? Now, rather than saying, look, what's in it for me, what I should do first for you, Adam, is say, what can I help you with? What can I give you? Because if I give you something, I know in the big world of business, when I'm helping you, guess what you're doing? You're going to turn around and help me back, right? And yep. And so by doing that, we create what I call that three R's. And so then from that really has to become these things. We have to share. Okay. So we share. So we get in the room. I practice the practices of real masterminding in terms of the real stuff, not the fake stuff that you see these false prophets talking about out there. Like, let me teach you the secrets behind door number one. Let me tell you the secrets. The secrets are we all get together. We all give, we all get. That's the secret. So we share. And by sharing, we learn. You know, today I had an unbelievable session where, you know, it was a family business, and where the second, the daughter is working with her dad and taking over a massive business. And then how does she carve out her own identity out of that? How does she become the CEO when she's the daughter, when she's the, you know, the family member, she's the youngster. And so here was this group of unbelievable talented executives who were all pitching in, not to say you must do this, but saying, hey, have you thought of this? Have you thought of this? Letting her take her own course and do the own thing. So that sharing then gets learning, and the learning becomes cheering. Okay. And then with that, you know, as we found through COVID, I added another one, and that's the caring, is that we're all caring for each other, and we all, it's all genuine. And so if you show up in our community with a catcher's mitt, we're going to kick you out because you're playing the wrong game. You know, you come, you should be coming with a bag of goodies and a bag of things to say, hey, how can I help you? And the more we help each other, the more we get.
It's amazing. And I've met some fantastic people through this process. And you had mentioned business first responders. It was something that you sort of coined back in mid-March.
I registered it.
Oh, did you?
I registered. Nobody had had it. I thought, wow, I wonder if that's available. I buy domains like crazy. Yeah, I own it. I'm going to do something with it at some point.
Well, and back in that in those days, it felt like we were getting into sort of a 90-day sprint. Go out there, help as many people as you can. And now, fast forward now, whatever it is, 120 days, give or take, from that standpoint. Things are heating up in different parts of the country.
Yeah,
it
but
feels
we're
like
emerging.
We're in another 90-day sprint.
Yeah, I don't know if we're in that kind of sprint. I actually feel it's coming out. I think we're now getting into what the new normal is, whatever it is. I've always said the new normal is always the normal. That's what it is. I mean,
right.
I've never known anything different. You just happen to throw COVID in the middle of it with, you know, blatant racism and downturn of business and, you know, a political climate where everybody hates everybody. Other than that, everything's great, you know, Mrs. Lincoln. You know, and so I think we're into that. I told everybody, you just had to have the mindset to get through the first 90 days. That's it. You know, if you got through, and I said 60, if you could get your business through 60 days, you're going to make it. And that's truly been the case, you know, maybe 90 days. Well, now we're in just a different norm. So by that time period, you got to be, if you don't know where you're going right now, okay, you better raise your hand and get some coaching, because it's different. It's going to be unique. That might mean you have to cut back on things. It might be you have to let people go. It might be you have to reprioritize. Or during that time period, you should have been pivoting your butt so fast, you've drilled yourself a hole in the ground, meaning you're anchoring somewhere. And that's what you should have been doing. And if you haven't been doing that, you better hurry up and catch up, because that's what you have to do. So, you know, so businesses like ours, businesses like yours, we changed a little bit of the model. I talked to the CMO of Sharp just a few minutes ago, and, you know, they had to change. They had to do it differently. He said, you know, we're now phoning all of our customers. I said, well, excuse me, you know, Peter, can I ask you a question? You weren't doing that before?
Right.
But his point was, we're more about in-depth in, you know, and we're getting to know people better and drilling down deeper and really trying to figure out, rather than, you know, transactional. So people are starting to make a relation. I do think we're at some real pivotal changes in the way we are operating. I think we care more now. I think we're reaching out more. I think we're a little nicer, except for, you know, unless you're running for public office. But, you know, I think by and large, we're a little nicer about stuff.
I think so as well. It's interesting what you just said, because I hosted a roundtable with about 10 clients last week, and uncertainty was sort of the word of the day. It was like, how are we going to get through uncertainty? How do we think about uncertainty? And I had the feeling we were being intellectually lazy. We weren't thinking about it properly, because what we are, we're certain this is our world, right?
Yeah, for the rest of our lives. I think this isn't going away. I think a year from now, we'll be dealing with another one and something else. And whatever it is, aliens are coming into the atmosphere, whatever. And we should just understand that that's what we're into. That's what we got.
Yeah. And why do we have to sit back and wait for when we get to go outside again, or go sit in bars, or go get on planes, right? We are where we are. And this is true, COVID or no COVID. This is every business needs to be thinking about this. This allows us to do it, right?
Yeah, Adam, I'm okay with staying at home. I like it. You know, my commute is walking down 12 steps. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I just saved myself 2 hours a day, you know? And I'm a terrible driver. So if I'm driving to the office, I'm, you know, I'm looking out over here for deer or, you know, eagles or whatever, because I live way out in the middle of nowhere. And so when I have to drive into the office, it's 15 miles, and you know, and it takes me about 20 minutes. Well, I could, a lot could happen to me on that way. Now I walk down 12 steps. I'm down 12 steps. I mean, this is awesome. I'm done. I turn the computer off. I walk upstairs. Honey, I'm home. I mean, how could that not be good?
The amazing thing, when this first started, I was done with all of my quote unquote work at like noon, because I woke up, I didn't have to get in the car. I could shower, but I didn't have to put on a suit and I didn't have to do all that stuff. I got on the phone at 7 o'clock in the morning. I got through all my emails and all my stuff. And next thing I know, it's noon and I didn't have any to-dos. Obviously, I picked up the phone and created more contacts and talked to more people.
You got more effective is what happens. You get a lot more effective. And then if you start putting in more tools, I'm putting in a lot more tools. I've never worked harder in my life as I'm working right now. And I'm enjoying it. I'm actually enjoying most of it. I'm not enjoying everything because it comes with problems too. But by and large, yeah, I'm pretty happy. I told my wife the other day, I've never been happier in my life with the way it's going than this, but there's, you know, I still have other aspects I'd like to get rid of, or, you know, I got to go punch in the throat, so to speak.
Me as well. I need a new chair. I've been sitting in my chair more than I ever have because I'm not traveling. I'm not in and out of my car and whatever. So now my back hurts because I've got a bad chair because I sit here for 8 hours
talking on the phone. I got to solve that problem. I miss my Varidesk. I had one in New York and a Varidesk and a stool. And that was, I always used that, and I'd go up some days, I'd down some days and so forth. So I missed that. But
I want to ask what you're thinking, be a little bit visionary on just the office environment and, you know, people going, I think people going back, people spending money on them, people spending the money they did. Cause you had a pretty expensive office in New York.
Yeah. Well, in New York and South Dakota too, it's our South Dakota office stuff is pretty swanko stuff, but So anyway, I think it's going to change. You know, some people do work better from home. Some actually work better in the office, but you also want that, some of that camaraderie. You want some of those things. I think it's going to change the way we look at an office. As an office is always like, this is my office, your office, and your office. Well, what if we just made all the things the same and we made it so anybody could walk up, boom, you're ready to go. And it's mobile friendly. It's, you know, it's instant friendly. So I think that's got some appeal to it. I think we're going to see more meeting and collaboration space than we will have individual space. And I think that's pretty cool. I also don't think that everybody will be in the office 5 days, 6 days a week. I think you'll be in there a few days a week and you can get it done. The issue is going to be more around how do I hold everybody accountable? So what are the accountability tools that you use? And then what is the other connection pieces you need? And we're struggling with that. You know, we have daily huddles, every other day huddles, depending on what team it is. We have a full team meetings, you know, twice a week. Do we cut that back? Do we increase it? You know, I told them, I don't want to decrease it. I want to keep that because it's the only time I get to see everybody in one, you know, one, two, three screens. You know, that's it. That's the only time I can see them. Yep. And I don't get to see everybody. So there's some things that's going to change without question. I think it's going to be for the positive.
What do you think? How do you see the difference between accountability and micromanagement? It's a fine line for a lot of leaders out there.
Well, if I got to micromanage it, then you're not accountable. If I have to micromanage you, then there's an issue with accountability or reliability or competency, one of the two or both. So what you have to do is get into this rhythm of what are your conditions of satisfaction? So you and I know what are your OKRs, you know, or what are your goals, your promises. And then we got to get into this thing about how often you're going to update me on them so I don't have to go look for them. And because if I got to come looking for them and I keep looking for them, there's a problem.
Yep, that makes sense. I want to pivot to your newest book, The Hero Factor. And I want to just talk about how that came about. How did you come up with the principles in that book? And how do you look at business differently than a lot of others, which is what the book's all about?
Yeah, well, it's all about value-based business and putting people above profits, really, in terms of the culture and how you do it and why other businesses do it. The book came about as a result of us getting involved with a group called the Hero Club. A guy named Rob Ryan sold his company for $20 billion. When he sold it, he set aside a certain percentage of the company for everybody in the company that made the single largest number of millionaires ever created in one day. Boom. Unbelievable. And people would come up to him and say, Mr. Ryan, you don't know me, but I'm the night watchman. and I can send my kids to college. You're my hero, you know, or go up to Mrs. Ryan, who's Terry, chief legal officer, his wife, and say, Mrs. Ryan, you don't know me, but my wife has cancer, and you know, she wasn't going to make it. She didn't have health insurance. Now I can pay for the operation. She's going to live, you know, things like that. It was like, whoa. So they didn't feel like heroes, but they started helping other people do what they do and how they do it. And they helped them build the, you know, other businesses. They can go out and build their own hero business. And so we bought that company. We were involved with that company and got it and bought it. You know, it was a group. So think of it like a mastermind or a peer council. And so we bought that group. And as we looked at it, I said, what's the differentiations on these kinds of businesses? Why are they hero businesses? And I found certain kinds of values. And so I outlined it in the book, and I give everybody a free assessment on how to see if what your hero factor is, and whether you're a do-gooder, whether you're a wannabe, you're a good co, whether you're an asshat, whether you're, you know, a bottom liner, all these different kinds of, you know, models that you might be. It's on page 12, by the way, the book. And then really that I found out that the businesses that operate with values, they gross more money than any other business in their category. They make more money, they net out more money, so they're more profitable. And they have employees who are more engaged, they have customers who are happy, and they have vendors who want to do business with them, and they're admired in their community. Hello, who doesn't want to be that? And so it's just a very special kind of thing. And so we talk about what's needed to be those kinds of, like, the diversity and inclusion you must have in terms of being able to serve a population that you serve, and to be that population, to be reflective of your community. And then, you know, to pick a side, for you to take stand on issues, to say, you know, certain things in our community mean something to us, and to say, no, we're going to operate like this. And so that's a lot of what we do in the book, you know, and I tell in the book, the hero factor.
That's awesome. And I've read the book, and there's some simple, easy steps, but I love the part that the hero businesses are more profitable than other businesses, even though profit is not what we're talking about.
No, they would rather do the right thing. And by doing the right thing, you get a better result. You know, that's why earlier we started this conversation, Adam, people would say in business, oh, what's in it for me? That wrong, wrong, wrong. Like I said before, if you give, you get. The more you give, the more people go out of their way to give you something back. I'm telling you that. Look, I'm not the most talented guy in the world, you know, but I'm always making myself available. How can I help you? What can I do? Many times at my peril, meaning it costs me money or it costs me time, certainly costs me time. But why? Well, there's a pony in there for that person. And, you know, let me help them. And usually that pays off. If nothing else, I feel better. You know, feel better. Hey, you know, I got enough things to feel bad about, so let's go feel good about something.
That's fantastic. And by nature and through your experience, you go do, and then you figure it out. There's a lot of people, especially now, that are still a little bit stuck. They're still just a little gun shy because they're waiting for something. What's your advice to those people?
What are you waiting for? If you want to win the lottery, you got to buy a ticket. You got to go to the store and buy a ticket. You can't just hope I'm going to win the lottery and not buy a ticket. Okay. So, you know, if you want to change something, you got to get started. Okay. We'll be right. No, of course not. Even if you plan, even if you do all the plan, I've never seen a business plan work yet. None of them. Not one. Okay. I've never seen my investment plans work. Okay. There's too many factors, but I do know that if you do something, something happens, right? So, you know, an idea without implementation is air. You know, so don't tell me you're going to do these things or talk to me about you're going to do them. Just freaking do them. Do them. And then, you know, adjust along the way. You're going to make mistakes without question. And you're going to make mistakes even if you planned it out. I'll guarantee you're going to make them.
Definitely. Final question for me. You know, what's next? You're continuing to build out the C-suite network. You've got a few more coming. What do you want to see from yourself going forward?
Specific goals. I mean, we got a certain number of members we're going to bring in this year, and we're on track to more than exceed that right now. You know, if it holds true, we're going to increase more podcast shows. We're going to increase our listeners. We're going to increase our downloads. We're going to increase our advertisers. I mean, I'm concentrating right now. One word: scale, 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 scale. How can I make it bigger? How can I get more people involved? How can I make it better and bigger for everybody that wants to be a part of the C-Suite Network? So I encourage people to come and join us. It's real simple. C-Suite Network. And we've got C-Suite Radio, C-Suite TV, C-Suite Book Club. You know, we got C-Suite Supplies, C-Suite Loans, C-Suite Connect, C-Suite SEO. I'm just going to keep doing it. We're just going to have fun.
Well, I love being a part of it. I've got two people coming to hang out with us today at whatever, 2 o'clock Pacific, two new people. Yeah. It's interesting. And we could keep talking forever, but one last point for me is when you get involved in something, it's amazing what now shows up in your life, right? Because yeah. I show up every Friday and a small group of us show up on Sundays as well and just talk business and introduce ourselves and ask questions in a Zoom environment. All of a sudden I'm talking to a guy yesterday in London and he's talking about what he's doing. And I said, you need to come if the timing works. I don't know what time it is in London at 2 o'clock Pacific. I
was 8 o'clock. No, a little bit later than that, about 11 o'clock. Yeah.
All right. I said, if you're awake, just show up to one. This has been transformative for a lot of people there. And I have another guy that's looking to raise money. And wow, all of a sudden, perfect. I know three people that might fit because I've met him. So if you think about something you want, if you show up, other things will show up in your life. And I appreciate you doing that for us. Oh. And everyone should look up Jeff at Jeffrey Hazlett pretty much everywhere on social media or at C-Suite Network. I appreciate the time, appreciate the conversation and everything you're doing for the world.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it too. And keep rocking this podcast. We need more great podcasts like this on C-Suite Radio, and you are doing it.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
You've been listening to The Entrepreneur's MBA. Download Adam's free book, How to Make More Money in Your Business, at www.freebookfromadam.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.